Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, this is Blake Howard. This is One Heat Minute Productions. This is Min Hunter, and this is an episode message right from the top. I do have to apologize. This is such an annoying thing to happen, but it has happened so rarely, and I have not been able to control it for this episode. The episode you're about to hear is a terrific episode of our new show, Min Hunter, which is examining Michael Mann's 1986 masterpiece, Manhunter. The guest today is one of my dearest friends, Jen Johans, and in this episode, you'll hear that my audio sucks. It is not dulcet. It is not delightful. It is not delicious, as you may be hearing right this very second on this gorgeous microphone audio. You are hearing a kind of muddy, weird thing that happened, and I cannot explain it. I don't know why it happened. It just happened. So I've tinkered with it enough, but I just want to say right out on Front Street, I apologize. I did not want to lose this great episode with Jen. There's so many great insights that she has. Her audio is pristine and perfect, and the audio for the actual clip that we are discussing, the scene from Manhunter, is absolutely pristine as well. Apologies in advance. I know it's annoying. I've gone through and checked all the episodes around it, so this is the only episode that has been impacted, but I just needed to give you guys the shout. Apologies in advance for the poor audio, but hopefully that distraction, that frustration you can get over, because there's a terrific episode of Manhunter coming up, a terrific scene to discuss with one of my dear friends, Jen Johans, on this very great episode. Take a listen. I hope you enjoy it. I'm so annoyed at myself, but you're going to hear the 16th scene from Michael Mann's Manhunter, and Jen and I talk about it. Here it is.
Look at the screen. William Blake's The Great Red Dragon and the woman clothed in the rays of the sun. Do you see?
I know that I'm not smarter than
you. Then how did you catch me?
You had disadvantages.
What disadvantages?
You're insane.
Do you see?
You're so sly. So am I.
Do you see?
You're supposed to be his friend, Jack. Why didn't you leave him alone?
Do you see? Mrs. Leeds, do you see?
Yes.
You want the scent?
Smell yourself.
Do you see?
Just you and me now, sport.
Do you see?
You've seen these films, haven't you, my man?
You owe me all.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Manhunter. This is a podcast investigating and profiling Michael Mann's 1986 adaptation of Thomas Harris's Red Dragon, Manhunter. Yes, it's Minhunter, because we're minute, all things minute here at One Heat Minute Productions. It could have easily been Man, M-A-double-N Hunter. Thank you, Manolo Douglas, for sharing that with us. It's now going to haunt me that maybe that was the better name, but we are where we are. We are now at the 16th scene of 24 in the breakdown of the series. There are more episodes than scenes because some scenes demanded more attention. And we have arrived at a fantastic scene that is low-key one of the most sought-after scenes. I wasn't expecting this to be one of those. It was kind of like when I was doing One Heat Minute and people were like, I have to do the tunnel scene. I have to do the tunnel scene. And then it started to come out. I'm like, you know, maybe the tunnel scene is like one of the scenes of the movie. The scene that we've arrived to, we've just seen poor Freddie Lowndes flame up in the preceding seconds and roll down, and joining me to discuss the fallout, what it's like to have a serial killer sent to your house, and the most deep and meaningful existential conversations in a cereal aisle, is one of my dear friends, the legendary voice and curator behind Watch With Jen podcast, of which I'm a huge fan and has some of the best and like geekiest film conversations. There's a kind of nowhere else that Jen gets like great conversations out of people. And, you know, an amazing award-winning writer, author on filmintuition.com. She's got all this stuff going on, but mainly Watch with Jen is where you've heard her before. And you've heard her definitely on One Heat Minute Productions with us talking all things Midnight Run. It's Jen Johans. Jen, welcome back to one of our
shows. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Yes, we first bonded over Heat. That was in 2019. So we've had 5 years of podcast conversations and Zoom hangs and pandemic movie club meetings. And you're one of my dearest friends. So it's always a pleasure. And it's an honor to be on your pods because you do some of the most thoughtful podcasts today on film.
Thank you. And you forget great brunch associates, recently in Los Angeles. And us being the same height, Jen not feeling like she's the tallest person in the room, which is a change usually.
Yeah, you're taller than me by a couple inches, and I loved it. Yes.
Usually with our dear friends, Rob Belushi, poor Rob stands next to the tall people. I'm like, oh, God, we love Rob. He's standing next to the tallest person again. So here we are, Manhunter. When I spoke about this project really early, it was not formalized. Usually I do get to the point of really being organized, breaking things down for my guests, trying to make it simple for them to orient themselves where we are in this kind of deep dive. It's a little bit different to some of the other series we've done. And I kind of canvassed very early and informally. I started doing it more formally as the series grew, but like I sort of canvassed with my core group of friends, as I do every time on these kinds of shows. You guys might have realized my core group of friends, and sort of said, these are some of the folks I'm going to get on the show in some way, shape, or form before going to others. And Jen immediately was like, I really want to do this scene. And I was like, oh, okay, great. And what happened afterwards that Jen didn't get to see was that lots of people were like, I want to do that scene. I'm like, it's taken. I was just like, it's taken. Sorry.
Oh, no.
There's no pressure for you, Jen. It's just like, it is what it is. I was like, no, it's taken. I'm going to do that with Jen. I think it's going to be a great convo. Next, move on to the next one. So can you tell me a little bit? I think folks who know us have heard us talk about De Niro and talk about Michael Mann and us talk about these kind of things. But on your show, which people can hear most recently, you and I and Rob Belushi talked about Mindhunter, which obviously has an entanglement with this, but you're not like a huge true crime serial killer person just in general. So I'm really interested to see, like, what was your relationship with Manhunter and this scene in particular, and why does it kind of like beat out some of those other kind of boring examples of true crime that we see, you know, populating media today?
Yeah, overall, I am not a big true crime person, serial killer. I'm not one of those women who falls asleep watching like Law and Order SVU. I don't know how they do that. Yeah, that is not me at all. So I love crime that has to do with like solving it or detectives or something on the intellectual side. Like, you know, we've bonded over Zodiac, which is a film that I love because it's journalists, it's outsiders trying to just puzzle things and figure stuff out. Who doesn't love that? And I think, you know, Silence of the Lambs and Seven aren't my favorites either. You know, please don't hit me up on social media like, oh my God. But they're not, I mean, they're great movies, but they're not my favorite. I'm not going to rewatch them like 25 times. But Manhunter kind of, you know, it taps right into that appeal that Zodiac has, or I have for it, which is an intellectual person trying to solve it. I love things that are psychological portraits, character driven. You know, I'm a big 70s film fan, so I like these sort of portraits of broken masculinity or people going through it. You know, my friends.
I read a great quote the other day, reminding me of exactly what you said as being a 70s film fan. It was in relation to the Burt Reynolds film Hustle. And when when Roger Ebert reviewed it, he goes, the movie, in a good way, is way more interested in the characters than solving the crime.
Exactly.
And I thought that was just such a, you know, there's a statue of that critic for a reason, like just such a economical, beautiful way of the words of like the characters are so much more involving and interesting than necessarily the particulars of solving the crime. In this particular instance, obviously some procedural things that we love all the detail, and in Manhunter we do, but I feel like that's what's fantastic about what you're saying is the way that Michael Mann has got that very 70s feeling, like the characters are the most important thing. We have to be in with these people's inner lives to understand them, to be invested enough in them to go through some pretty heinous shit.
Yeah, it's men, having an existential crisis and wanting to get back to the water, literally. I mean, you even have in the scene we're going to be talking about, William Peterson is wearing blue. And in another scene where he's with the FBI, we see the blue on blue. He wants to get back there. He wants to get to that paradise, which is always by the water in a Michael Mann movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, or the night sky. It's always blue.
Yeah. He actually revealed to us on our Miami Nice live episode with him that, like, why do your characters look out to the water? And he was like, it's a personal affliction that I reflect in my characters. Like, if I'm trying to figure something out, I go to the water. So
Yeah.
it's Michael Mann just staring off at the ocean. We need someone to take some photographs of him staring off at the ocean, like his characters. That's what we need. There's an idea for
Yeah.
someone. All right, so we're here. I'm not gonna make Jen watch poor Freddie Lowndes in what I think is a brilliant piece of practical effects, just
Oh,
in
yeah.
general. And what we're handing off from a conversation with a mutual great friend, Jed Ayers. We're rolling straight into this. So we are going to watch the minute. We're going to interrupt it. It's actually just to orient you. It's 1 hour and 1 minute. And 12, 11, 12 seconds. It bridges like a second there, up until about 1 hour and 8 minutes and 53 seconds. This is specifically the theatrical cut timings of this event because the director's cut is a little bit less readily available. So some folks have got some folks have got dodgy connections. Some folks have got the actual beautiful, very limited print of the director's cut. So if you've got that, that's slightly different. It's about an hour and 6 minutes in up to an hour and 13 minutes, but there's a few other little bits and pieces that change that. But we're going to stick with the theatrical cut now. So Jen and I are going to start watching. We're going to start talking about everything that's happening and going down, and you guys are going to listen along. Enjoy.
Bauman. Just skip the cryptography and tell me what the hell it says, okay?
So one of the last times we talked on a podcast, Jen, was the finale of our series Midnight Run Through. And only about, I don't know, 8 seconds into this, we've got our boy, Dennis Farina, mustache and all, but on the good guy's side, de
I
demanding a
love it.
piece of cryptography be solved. So, and I just, yeah, I miss a payphone. I love a cop there with a moustache in the background, bless his heart, and Farina just looking cool as hell.
Absolutely. It is so good to have Farina. I eat up all of the Chicago thing. I'm sure you're going to get that with Rob Belushi as well. I lived in Chicago suburbs for a couple years as a kid. So that's one of my cities, and I love that accent. And every time that Dennis Farina is on screen, it's great.
Yeah. Cryptography. Just get the
Yes.
cryptography. It's not ography. It's some, yeah, there's like, I feel like there's some Australians may have got some words in common with Chicagoans. Maybe
Some
that's
of the
why
vowels,
some of the
yeah.
vowels. Yeah, maybe that's why you and Rob can understand me. So that's good. So obviously, just if this is you listening to this show for the first time because of Jen, welcome. We tackle each scene and we unpack it as it folds along. To catch you up on the sequence of the movie, we know that we've finally seen Francis Dolarhyde. We've finally seen the Red Dragon or the Tooth Fairy, as he's come to be known in the series. And now Will Graham and Jack Crawford, so Dennis Farina and William Peterson, have gone to a hospital. They're in an emergency room. Clearly, we see them going to visit because Lowndes has been discovered there. And so this is just right now at 1 hour and 1 minute and 22 seconds, we're just watching a doctor give Graham the kind of the skinny on what has been going on.
Trying to say anything at all.
No, I sure didn't.
He never regained consciousness. Did you hear the tape?
Yeah. Listen, Bauman just broke the code that Lecter used in the Tatler personal ad.
was the state of Maryland statutes. You need to know what it said right now.
What?
I love this complete blindside. Like, we listen to the tape. The tape is obviously what the Tooth Fairy has had Lowndes do. He never regained consciousness after that. Will is sort of steeped in guilt, but like Jack's onto the next thing. I love that in a Michael Mann movie, there's times when he knows that the characters really need to wallow in something, and then there's times where it's like, it's not that you're like dismissing death, but like there's something more pressing that more life could potentially be lost if you don't action this thing. You know, does that make sense? Am I
They're on a seesaw too.
Yes.
And one is standing and one is sitting, and one wants to get to that next piece of information and the other one is absorbing it. William Peterson, who's sitting. Yeah.
I love that. That's a great way to picture Jen. That's a seesaw. Because I was watching a really terrible, I think it was like late 70s, 80s action movie called Superstition, sorry. And like characters were dying horrible deaths. And then the next scene, everyone was like, yeah, it's like a normal day. And I kept going like, what is going on? Like someone dies with like a bandsaw falling off of something. He gets murdered. Then someone like gets hung in an elevator shaft. And like people are like, hey, where's Billy? And they're like, oh, I think he was fixing the elevator. Anyway, back onto it. Let's have a picnic. And I was just like, what is going on here?
But that's not
what this movie is doing.
That happened in Friday Foster with Pam Grier. Which she's a journalist, like her friend dies or somebody very close to her, and in the next she's taking like a sensual shower and smiling, and you're like, what?
I'm like, what? it's crazy. Anyway, but that is not
that is not this movie.
That is not this movie. And I think that it's weird that someone could watch this movie and see this seesaw as we're watching it. We'll just pause it at, you know, 1 hour, 1 minute, 42 seconds. See the seesaw of these emotions and not realize how much they've had to do to earn the speed with which they're about to execute this, which I think is really important. And as a storyteller, it's hard.
Yeah. Well, it goes right back to the beginning with Dennis Farina's character wanting to be protective of Will, but also needing him to do his job.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. There is a certain element where he needs him, and protection, they go hand in glove.
Yep.
All right, let's hear another shock revelation.
Listen to me. Everything is okay. I've taken care of it.
There is nothing better to me than a character saying everything is okay and I've taken care of it. And then you know that something horrible is
falling. Oh my gosh, I know. It's like when somebody says we need to talk.
Oh, or God.
I need to tell you something. And you're like, fine. Oh God. Yeah.
Everything's fine. I had to
Blake just died. This just happened. Yeah, something that is going to wreck you. Yeah.
You know this, but my daughter Hazel, a couple of years ago, broke her leg on a trampoline.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
And, you know, it's been a couple of years. She's all but banned from trampolines.
Okay.
And, especially backyard trampolines. Anyway. She was playing on our friend's backyard trampoline and she didn't like hurt herself catastrophically, but she jumped up and I don't know what the kid's doing, but like the trampoline bounced in a weird way. She jumped up and she kneed herself in the face on the trampoline. Like this is a few weeks ago now, so it's done. She came up to me and she had a graze on her face and basically gave herself like a mini black eye. And this was at a time when her mum wasn't at home. Her mum was on an interstate trip and I had to be like Jack Crawford. Everything's fine. It was like,
but
everything's fine. I'm taking care of it. But Hazel has a black eye. And she's like, what? Everything's fine. She's okay. Everything's ice. Fine. You know, got a black eye. It sucks. You're finding your life. But I love the stakes of it in this scene and in this moment, because I just love Farina's face because he's usually such a hard man. But in this moment, it is a real softness.
He's tender. Yeah.
And real tender. And I just want you not taking care of it, but you have to listen. And we're about to see the seesaw change dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
What is it, Jack?
Bastard gave me your home address. It said Graham Home, 3860 DeSoto Highway, Captiva, Florida.
The posture's changed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Save yourself, kill them all.
And do you love Jen? Sorry, we just have to go back. I'm going to play that little sequence again. Will is crouched down, and in the background there is a painting of a boat on the
Yes.
ocean. On
I
the ocean.
know. There's so much of it. Yeah,
Like,
he's wearing black, but like the chairs in the hospital are blue. I mean, there's like a little snippet of that. Yeah. He's got to get back to that oceanic paradise.
so amazing. Let's listen to that line. What Dolahide, or what, like the rights of Dolahide.
Bastard gave me your home address. It said Graham Home, 3860 DeSoto Highway, Captiva, Florida. Save yourself, kill them all.
Get me a plane.
Will! Will! Will!
We have the kid in the blue background again. Yeah, very Michael Mann, waking up mom. Yep.
Yeah, it's the double seesaw here. I'm going to use that phrase.
Yeah.
It's such a great, like, of firstly, Crawford says what he's got to say. Will jumps up, races to the elevator, get me a
Yep.
plane. It's all happening. And then his son is just standing there. Mom, like, I hear something. It's
Yeah.
about to happen. It's 1 hour, 2 minutes, 7 seconds. Again, these beautiful shadows being cast off of their home.
Yep.
Mom. Huh? What? Someone's outside. There are noises. Where? Outside.
I can't imagine Jen just pausing this here. We see Kim Greaves waking up as Molly. I can't imagine what it would be like in the first instance watching this in the theater.
Yeah.
Because, like,
How terrifying.
I'm so accustomed now forever that, like, oh, everything, everything's going to be fine. There's no problem. Like, Molly wakes up, everything's cool. Yeah, I'm always like, yeah, I'm always wondering what
This
people would
was
have been feeling in the theater.
The slasher movie era, just a few years after, like, Friday the 13th, Halloween, prom night, all of that. So the idea of this woman being woken up and like there are men outside or there's noise, I mean, it'd be terrifying. Yeah.
Yeah, and like in an earlier scene, which if
Yeah.
folks have already listened, I've spoken to Michael Rothman, like Graham on the plane.
Oh, yeah.
When he's on the plane, like the reality of the disgusting crime scene photos of all these families
Finally
and
revealed.
finally revealed, and we're there. And so, this picturesque sort of seaside, Captiva, Florida moment is just like, oh, this could just be awful. And the Graham, much like that first footage when he goes to the lead's home, like his bedroom is all white. Just like the lead's
Yes.
bedroom. So it's just like
Yep.
another, oh my God, this is just a perfect family target. A smaller one, but a perfect family target that he's now personally entangled with. So there's a bit of a panic in the cinematography, which is apt for them getting out of the room, but they've now got this steady tracking shot, and an hour, 2 minutes, 30 seconds just coming across as
Go back
she
to your
walks
room.
through.
Close the door.
So great.
Also, what they're doing sonically with like hearing the aquarium sound, and
Yes.
it is true. All of a sudden, everything is heightened. I had a
Yes.
really big scare once. I got up to get water in the middle of the night, and when I went to the kitchen, I noticed our front door hanging open, and it was like 1 in the morning, and then you go through the whole house. And you don't want to, make sure everything is okay. And then we found out, like, later that there had been somebody going around and trying doors and, figuring out ways to get inside doors in the middle of the night and exposing themselves to people as they slept. And it was right in our neighborhood. And so then just this idea of that probably happened is terrifying, but it brings you back to immediately getting the water. Seeing the door hanging open, everything got really quiet and really like slow, like time kind of stopped. And so this idea of suddenly you hear the aquarium, like suddenly I was aware of the oven, the noise that, the electricity makes. And so that works really well here.
There's so many times I think everyone who's listening, you lock your doors at night, like you lock the doors in your house, and there's so many times you go back up to bed and you're like, did I lock that door? Did I
Did I
lock
do something?
it? Did I lock the door? And you go back downstairs and you lock it, or you go back down and you discover that you haven't. But yeah, you're so right. There's certain things have sounds. Your fridges have sounds. Like, you know, if anyone's got a fridge that makes
Creaking.
ice, you know, if you can walk down and your fridge will make an ice noise, and you're like, it sounds, you know, I think I saw a funny meme where someone's like, thank you, fridge ice maker, for sounding exactly what it sounds like for someone breaking into my house. So I get terrified in the middle of the night every time that happens. So, but yeah, like you hear things, and there's like the like exhaust fan hood of my stovetop has
Oh, but
like a little light, has a
yep.
little light, and that little light
Buzzes.
seems to buzz like this tank. Yeah, it's really crazy. Why it does that, I have no idea, but it just does. And like sometimes if you leave it on, that's one of the things that you can hear as you come downstairs into the kitchen. It's really,
For sure.
that's really interesting. But yeah, I love what you said there. It's just like the heightened sonics of this moment are, we are in Molly's POV, even if it's audio POV, of like all the things she's hearing to try and determine that this isn't just a nightmare for her son. So great how it changes just as soon as they get there. And then again, this other downward angle. So you're anticipating, is that an hour, 3 minutes, and 9 seconds, you're anticipating that you're going to be able to hear other people, other things happening, and see shadows being cast on the house. And immediately we see a shadow outside.
And the point of view, the camera looking up at her, and then the shadow above is terrifying.
Yeah. And also, this is equally terrifying that Molly is going to the door to open
I know. You're like, come on, lady,
it.
no.
Please, Molly, don't do this.
And grab a fireplace poker or something.
Yes, exactly. And then, despite the fact that we've got a guy who's really tall, has blue eyes, just like Dolehide, and blonde hair, it ends up just being a very dumpy and very relieving police officer for a moment. So we can watch, when Jack said he took care of it, he really took care of it, because what happens from this moment in an hour and 3 minutes, 29 seconds, you just see literally a stream of chaos of bodies and men in motion out the front of their home. We're going to watch it now.
It's like
You're
in
all right.
ET when everyone shows up.
Yes, it's like ET. That's exactly right. Such a
Which
cool.
was like a year or two before this. So
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right.
What is it?
Look, he's
What is
got
it?
guys.
What's
There's
the matter?
guys with hundreds of guys with shotguns,
Ma'am,
it
I think
feels
you
like.
should come back inside.
What's going on?
Come back inside,
So what's
please.
go
I think you should come back inside.
At least you said, I think you should come back inside instead of like, I think you should calm down, because then
Yeah.
we would kind of been rooting for her to clock him, because it's
Yeah.
like, what the hell's going on?
I think I really love that cop in the history of movie cops. Ma'am, I think you should come back inside. You're holding a 12 gauge shotgun. You're like a giant guy. There's people swarming through my yard and under my house. I think you should come back inside. I think you should come back inside. It's just like it's the best possible calming mechanism. Just come back inside. Like, because his first, you know, job is to protect her. So he's like, no, come back inside. And I've got a big, gigantic shotgun. So if there's going to be any trouble, there's a ton of guys outside, and I have a giant shotgun. And so.
He doesn't, he's mellow, but my one thing, being related to lots of police, is he didn't identify himself right away. Like, he
Yeah.
didn't say which police department or what he's there for. And I mean, okay, being an American, you hear all we have a lot of crime, people pose as cops, people will there's incidents where they can pull you over, it's not cops, that kind of thing. But all these people come in the yard, you think, okay. But yeah, it might have gone a little better if he would have identified himself right away, I
Yeah,
think.
I think the fact that there was a phalanx of like cop cars and people behind him, that it was okay. It's like she's caught the guys, and he's like, Yeah, I don't probably don't need to identify myself because she can see that there's like, seven or eight other cops like running around with pump action shotguns and torches underneath the house. I think everything's okay. So, but yeah, I totally agree. Like in a normal movie, you're like, I want that person to attempt to identify themselves so there's no like subterfuge. But I think that man is smart enough to know like he want they want to protect Molly and Will and their little boy, and they want to get back to hunting this guy down because this is just all Lecter playing silly games.
Blake, I don't think I told you this story.
Oh
The
God,
High
here we
School Musical 3 SWAT team. Did I tell you the story? No.
go.
Okay. So I was sent High School Musical 3 of all movies to review. And it's kind of that thing where you're
It's very
watching it
you. It's very
and
you.
you're like in your late 20s or early 30s and you're like, I'm too old for this, but professionally I'm reviewing it. So you're in your house. All of a sudden, on the opposite side of the wall, free, come out with your hands surrounded, you're surrounded, like come out with your hands up, like all of these orders. And it was chaotic, like some people were saying freeze, some people come out with your hand, like they hadn't coordinated it. It was weird, and it's shouty and it's loud, and I'm like sitting there for a minute. I live in a condo community with like lots of old people, essentially in Arizona, in my little quiet neighborhood. It is in Phoenix, it is a busy area, but I'm just like chilling. The shouts keep coming and I'm like, well, holy shit, am I supposed to go outside? Like, what is going on? And so I stop the movie. Like, am I in trouble for watching High School Musical 3? I don't know. So I go down the hall,
You're on a list. You're on a
I
list.
start opening the door. All of a sudden I hear, ma'am, go back inside, go back inside. And I'm like, okay. So I shut the door, like, okay, I guess I'm not in trouble for watching this movie. And then like 10 minutes later, the guy knocks on my door and I open it and he apologized and he said there had been somebody who broke in a house like nearby and thought that this man ran to the back by our swimming pool. And so that's what was the, they thought he was armed and it was a whole thing. And so he's like, I didn't mean to scare you to death, like whatever. But it kind of reminds me of the situation where you're like just minding your own business and all of a sudden that happens and
Oh my
you don't know
God,
what's
Jack.
going on. And it's like, go back in your house, come back in your house.
We'll be back after this quick break.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
And can I just say this, because I've been thinking about it a lot since my trip to LA. Americans are like, oh, I could never go to Australia. It's scary. I'm like, no, it's not.
Not
It's
compared to
not.
America.
Like, America is the scary place. You guys have guns. Like,
Yes.
in Australia, there's like people with licenses and, hunters maybe have guns. Guns are not as like rife in our country, number one. We don't have to see these things. It's like, yeah, like a brown snake is scary, but they're not everywhere. You know what I mean? Like, I've never
And
seen
they're
one. I'm,
not packing.
and they're not packing heat. You just don't go near them and they don't bite you. Oh my God. So, Jen, I love that on a show. We've known each other for a lot of years. I love that on a show that like a new Jen story comes up, and that's a good one. That's a really good one. All right, so we're here 1 hour and 3 minutes and 50 seconds, and we've raced from Captiva, Florida, into a compound house that has like cop car guards, razor wire fences, and we're getting a whole like stream of people coming into this house. And what's good, Will is actually with Molly and their son.
Yep. He's still doing the William Peterson walk, which is like, I am the sexiest mofo of all time. It's like the same walk from To Live and Die in LA. I just saw that in LA in August, and people were actually, I love that movie so much, but people were actually laughing a little bit because he is like a cat ready to pounce a lot, and he will put his leg up on a sofa for no reason or on a table and kind of pose and like be ready to do something or make anybody that walks by who's like shows him a sign of interest. And so he's got that William Peterson thing even when he's all messed up and thinking about his family and Lecter.
Absolutely. And Molly looks pissed, which I think is super important in this scene. Like, he looks frustrated and annoyed and that it's happened, and but he almost looks like a punching bag that's about to be hit to me in this moment. An hour, 4 minutes, 18 seconds, this frame. He's like, he knows that Molly is pissed and that this situation has now entangled his family, which is the absolute last thing that he wanted. And here he is.
Time for a safe house where like the paradise in the background is on the wall, a picture.
Yes. And her eyes just here, an hour, 4 minutes, 32 seconds. She's like, I'm sorry, Molly. And she's just looking at him like this is exactly what I was talking about when I told Jack, like, you're his friend, Jack. You should have left him alone. This is what I knew would happen. So crazy. Great.
This place is fine. We'll be fine. He's after you now, isn't he?
It's just a precaution. Kevin, why don't you run down to the water, check out the dock?
I want to hang around here. I'm in the kitchen, Mom.
Okay.
What is that?
I love that.
He's being
Awesome.
protective, and her body language, putting like a finger on her lip and also her bangs being over her eyes. Like, these are worried people because she repeated the word fine twice in like very quick succession, which it means you're not fine. Like, it's okay. I'm okay. You're fine. Like, it's not good. And, but she's also just really worried about her. I mean, her and her son's safety, of course, but her husband, she's worried. Because she remembers what happened the last time.
Yeah, and he doesn't want to leave because he's seen the chaos. He knows that there's still an active threat. Like, even as a kid, he's got that intuition. Is like, this is not good. This is not good. And I'm in unfamiliar territory. And even though there are police around, I don't want to leave Mum. Like, Mum, I'm here. Like, I'm right here. Like, and yeah, I see you. And there's also that, like, one question is, in this moment, does Kevin feel like his dad's changed? Because that's, I guess, a running theme, especially in the director's cut of this movie, is the psychological impacts to Will and what that does to him. Like, there's Lecter taunting him with, smell yourself. And it's like, does he no longer feel comfortable? And I think that that's what's going to sort of drive us into the remainder of this scene, which we love both of us so much, coming up, which is, like, is he protecting his mum? Is he? It's a
I think,
strange thing.
yeah, I think he's protecting his mom, but he also suddenly dad doesn't seem like the person he's known. I
Yes.
think maybe he pushed down some of the fears from the hospital thing before. Maybe he didn't fully understand it, but now all of a sudden he's a little older. Kind of that thing when you realize as you age, like your parents are flawed human beings just trying to figure out stuff like you. It's a scary thing. You like imagining there are these all powerful people. I am related to a lot of cops who the job changed, and one of them remembers like when his kid all of a sudden realized you could be killed in the line of duty, suddenly like asking one night before bed, like, are you gonna get shot? Because an officer had just been killed, and how much that wrecked the kid at like 5 or 6, suddenly looking at dad differently. And him, oh no, I'm gonna be fine, all the things you tell your kid, but in the back of your mind, the kid knows it's a possibility, you know it's a possibility, and it's a scary thing. And so the son here is realizing that. Yeah.
What, he's afraid to leave you alone with me now? He saw the article in the Tatler.
I wanted to talk with him about it, but he said he wanted to bring it up to you face to face.
Good for him. Kevin, come on, help me unpack, will you? And we'll go get some groceries.
I love how the dad is annoyed and mad about that and the change in the son, but yet he's very tender and soft-spoken with him. He doesn't yell at him.
No, he would never yell at him.
I like that. Yeah.
I like it too. It's cheaper to say, why don't you say it? But it's like, he's a child. Like, he can be annoyed, but it's probably more, you know.
Like, why are you afraid of me?
Yeah, he
doesn't do that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Also, of course they're afraid of you when you scream, why are you afraid of me?
Of course, yeah, yes. Like,
everything's fine. It's okay.
Yes.
Okay, here we are.
First of all, I do have to say one thing that is amusing about this scene in the grocery store is the background changes like 85 times. But you don't even notice it because the acting is so good in the conversation. And part of you is thinking, well, maybe they kept walking a little bit. Like, you're kind of going with it. But then as you start getting into the minutiae, you're like, wait a minute, you know, that's a different box of cereal, or where are we right now? But you just kind of go with it. I also love thinking about what this scene, just how open it is and how earnest, and this idea of a father and a son, instead of trying to impart, you know, you have to be a man and you have to be strong. Like, he's being vulnerable with his son, which is scary. I'm one of those people who I always think men sometimes have the most honest and open conversations with you, sometimes on the phone when they can't see you, but also in the car, because you're both looking straight ahead, you know, you don't, it's not as scary. And so I think this, they are looking at each other, but there's also stuff in the background and there's normalcy. And there's this idea of sometimes you're not going to put on your scary voices or have a huge fight because you're in public. And you can think about movies that were maybe inspired by this scene. And one of them is The Hurt Locker. There's this moment near the end where Jeremy Renner's character gets back from the war and he goes grocery shopping, and she asks him to go get a box of cereal, and he's just overwhelmed and he's in the cereal aisle. So what we're saying is existentialism, cereal aisle, aisle 17 at your local grocery store. We don't know.
I think it totally
works.
That's
what we're here for.
The major thing there is exactly that hot kind of, like, I've heard that as like a, you know, anecdotal parenting advice with a teenager. It's like, you want to talk to a teenager? Go for a drive.
Yep.
Just drive. Just drive. Have a bit of music on. Make it as non-committal and non-confrontational as possible. We're moving in the same direction together, like, you know, metaphorically. And I think also, man, this is the other thing, is the power of the performance. Like, the nitpickers out there, like that kind of like whole substrata of film criticism on the internet where they're like, they move the cup. I'm just like, did the scene rock? Yes. And if it didn't, because you're noticing these things, then the movie's not resonating with you. So you should address how it's not resonating with you for you to then continually look for these like nitpicky things.
Because then you have all those YouTube assholes, like, you know, oh my god, her hair is in the wrong shot, or, you know, there's more asparagus on the plate, and you're like, really? You know, they're having this really intense conversation. If you're looking at the asparagus, like, you might have a problem.
You've lost. Who cares about the cereal? But let's hear Will talk to Kevin.
Mom are very well protected, you know. No one's gonna find out where you are.
He's in his blue shirt.
Yeah.
For the sea. Yep.
He's in his blue shirt, and then there's also just the, like, the comfort of, you're very well protected. Very well protected. No one's gonna know where you are. So he's trying to, like, he's trying to penetrate where the fear is lying.
Yeah. Mom are very well protected, you know. No one's gonna find out where you are.
Is there anything I need to know to see about Mom?
No. I think that is so sweet that the son's first is to protect mom.
Yeah. Is there anything you need to know about mom? Like,
to see about mom. Yeah. And I think that's really sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. Good kid.
This guy's trying to kill us.
We don't know that.
I think that's an interesting and maybe not entirely reassuring answer. This guy's coming to kill us, or he's going to kill us. We don't know that. He could have just been like, no, nobody's coming or nothing. But he knows stuff might happen and this kid might see some things, and he's being completely open. Yeah.
It's really tough to make a call. There is a certain point where you just flagrantly lie to little kids because you don't want them. They're not big enough. Their brains are not big enough to literally have not developed enough to cope with more difficult concepts.
Yeah.
And then there's a moment where it's like, we don't actually have to ask. Yeah, we don't know. Yeah. What do you mean?
Yeah.
My dad doesn't know. Like, you're old.
The
like,
dad, Blake.
You're dad. Yeah. You should know this, right? And it's like, we don't know. We don't know that. It's such a great thing. But also that it takes to that point of like, we're gonna lay it out.
Yeah.
Mom's safe. There's nothing that you need to know. We don't know that. And we'll just get to that because I want to hear that question again.
This guy's going to kill us?
We don't know that.
When are you going to kill him?
I'm not.
Which I think is another very powerful and very vulnerable. And you love that kind of masculinity because I think most dads, and especially the dads we're used to seeing in film, like the Dirty Harry, like, well, I'm gonna kill that son of a bitch. Like, his job is to find him. He doesn't even say it's my job to catch him, just it's my job to find him. And that's his part.
It's only my job to find him.
For his mom had this newspaper. It said you were in a special hospital.
Well, it was a regular hospital. And I was transferred into the psychiatric wing. That bothers you, doesn't it?
That's a good way to ask a kid a question. That bothers you, doesn't it? Like, how are you feeling? I was a trained mediator and a trained counselor for, I did peer mediation and peer counseling when I was younger. And it was always like, I feel messages, or how are you, put it on that instead of like telling somebody what to do or what to feel. Ask how they are reacting. Yeah.
How are you reacting to that?
Yep. It
bothers you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You're addressing what you're seeing in them. It's very smart. Yep. And it's also... Mm-hmm. It's not, again, he's so open and vulnerable in this conversation and being so candid that like he's trying to get back to a state of like disarming Kevin so that they've got the great relationship again, because they clearly already have a great relationship. But that this recent thread and these things that he's seen in the newspaper, it's like this is what's happening. And again, it's just another great touch and flurry, because we've already unpacked it to death now, the Lecter scene. And this is now here. This is the reality of what happened in the fallout of Lecter.
Yeah, in a normal situation, we're going grocery shopping, like trying to tell the kid we're
picking
okay.
cereal, and I was in a psychiatric wing because a cannibal tried to gut me.
Yeah.
Jesus <Christ. laughs>
But we can make chocolate chip cookies later because you're right by the Nestle. Yeah.
We're right next to the.
We're gonna eat our feelings.
Semi-sweet chalk morsels. Only $2.29. Delicious.
Pick me up a pack of those and let's make some cookies. Yeah.
I don't know. Was it because in the papers it said it was this man Lecter? What happened?
Well, Lecter was attacking college girls, and he killed them.
How?
In bad ways.
I love that.
Yeah.
He was attacking college girls, he killed them.
Yeah.
How? It's like, in bad ways. We know. In bad ways.
Yeah, it's the right way of saying it. You know, I mean, you don't want to give this kid nightmares.
Oh,
like,
my God,
how the kid
the rest of his life.
Adapted on the airplane to seeing, because their horror was our horror because we finally saw these things, which is something I actually love about Manhunter, is it doesn't relish in the gore. It doesn't relish in making the villain like, some super figure. Like the way it treats Hannibal Lecter is very different than the way like Jonathan Demme does. And both are valid and both make those movies work, but I prefer this sort of matter of fact thing. And yeah, it's Bad Ways. Yep.
Yeah, bad ways.
He was a psychiatrist. One of the girls was his patient, and I went to talk to him about her. I tried to build feelings in my imagination, like the killer had, so that I would know why he did what he did, because that would help me find him. When I was sitting in Lecter's office, and I looked up, I saw a book on his shelf. It had pictures of war wounds in it. And I knew it was him.
That actually reveals a lot too. It had pictures of war wounds in it, and I knew it was him, showing his intuition and just why he is as good as he is at his job. And he's actually using the skills he uses professionally as a dad here, letting the kid talk and trying to maybe build how is he feeling, those same kind of ideas. Why somebody would do what they do, like why are you suddenly wanting to protect mom? Yeah, and I think the war wounds and just where it would go is fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also just that whole, like, people have been wondering what his quote unquote superpower is, but it's like
Yeah.
I build feelings in my imagination to kind of ask myself to feel in a way what they would feel so that I can be empathetic towards them. It's like just literally the description of empathy in such a beautiful and succinct way. And it's like I
Yep.
saw something and I had intuition. That's the what do you call it? That's the like that's the unknown quantity, if you like, in his process is the intuition bit. It's like everyone can imagine and think, but it's that like I saw war wounds and that's how I thought about it.
Yep.
And so Kevin can't really rationalize why that was the thing, but I just knew.
He
And so
just
then
knew.
he can just see like, oh, well, Dad just knew. Like Dad just had a feeling. That's why he finds these people.
Yep.
And now also just as we're paused on 1 hour, 7 minutes and 9 seconds, if anyone's wanting some 501, we're standing in front of 501, just if you and some bran
Yeah.
muffin crisp if you need something. The cereal selection is never been more
Right by the
apparent in
Count
the
Chocula.
Count
Yeah,
Chocula behind
which
it. Yep.
everyone in the 80s remembers.
I
Yes.
was going to say, in Australia, we have nowhere near the amount of cereal that Americans have in
And
a cereal aisle.
Trix. Oh my God, I loved Trix when I was a kid. Yes.
So I went to a payphone down the hall to call the police. And that's when he attacked me.
Pause. That's also cool. He went to the payphone down, and it also shows like he puts himself in the mindset and he figures that out, but he doesn't maybe have the craftiness of like a stealthy dude who shows up with a pump action shotgun. Like he doesn't know that kind of angle. He isn't there to kill him. He doesn't realize like maybe I tipped him off or maybe my face changed.
Oh,
And
well,
also this shows the element of you had to go down the hall and make that call. Yeah, because we
yeah,
didn't
and
have cell
we
phones
didn't
and
have
we
cell
didn't,
phones.
yeah.
And but Lecter also sniffs out everything with him.
Oh
So it's no
God,
doubt.
yeah.
So as soon as he sees it, like whatever realization is on
Yep.
his face, we're like, oh no, Lecter would have clocked that he had him and he had to make a move.
A
That's just
hundred
as simple as
percent.
that.
Yeah.
You and Mom came to see me in the hospital, and that helped a lot. But after my body got okay, I still had his thoughts going around in my head. And I stopped talking to people. And a doctor friend of mine, a Dr. Bloom, asked me to get some help. And I did. And after a while, I felt better. And I was okay
A
again.
really gentle way of saying it, and I was okay again. And also letting the kid feel powerful that his love and mom's love actually did help.
Him and your
Like
mom helped.
helped, yeah,
Yeah.
you guys helped heal me, but it wasn't enough, so we had to get help. And also using the phrase like a friend of mine, like a doctor friend.
The doctor friend of mine.
Yeah, so it was like family and friends helped. And
Yeah,
I
and
think
giving him a
that's
name,
nice.
Dr. Bloom. He told me that I
Yes.
should go, and I did. I listened to my
Yep.
friends.
Yeah. And I w was okay again. I like that too. Yeah.
And the way you thought felt that bad.
Kevin, you're the ugliest thoughts in the world.
Oh.
Yep.
Gotta
And he
pause
has to
that.
look away there,
Yeah.
which I think is really good. I saw when I was zeroing in on the scene, I saw it on, on the Criterion Collection or the Criterion Channel. And then when I was looking it up on YouTube, just this part of it, people were like, oh, William Peterson is horrible. And everybody was taking, like, what are you nuts? Like, the way he uses eye contact and then has to look away. And it's because he's remembering how ugly those thoughts were.
Yeah.
And he has this beautiful kid who means the world to him, who he loves. And it's like, you want those thoughts and that kid to be as far apart as possible. Yes.
He's trying to bring him on the journey, but he doesn't want him to expose him. You know, it's a real delicate line.
Yes. And
What do
there's
you want to
some
be?
shame there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you want to be exposed to, and what are you exposing your kids to?
Yeah.
It's a real choice
For
because
sure.
there's a reality of what the world is that's in some things, and you don't want to sub you have to be careful of what concepts you expose your kids to and when.
Yep.
And right in this moment, he's got a young kid here who's getting older. He's probably like 10, 11, and it's like the world is starting to become much more crystal clear in sharp focus. And so at this moment, he's got to just deal with what is overwhelming. I think it's so beautifully and d delicate and deliberate. And they're the worst thoughts in the world. Of course, we've seen the inside of his brain so far.
Yep.
We know these are the worst thoughts. I just love this huge yawning beat here. We're at an hour and 8 minutes. I can tick for them
Yes.
just like processing this information and Kevin dealing with it and just not hurrying him up and not following it up with like, are you okay? Do you understand that? It's just like pause, let him process it. Let's see what the next question is. Do I answer it? And it's so brilliant where he just, you know, we sort of get back to some kind of normalcy here. It's brilliant.
And it's also, I mean, the kid's way of letting him know we can move on,
We can move on.
which I love because sometimes, when you're fighting with somebody or you've had a really heavy talk, you need eventually you're just going to keep going around in circles and talking it out. It's going to be too much that it's good to, it's a beautiful day or hey, what do you want for dinner? Like you need to change that
Yeah.
subject and let them know we can be okay with
We're
each
good.
other now. Yeah.
We're good.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you've got to clear the air. We're clear the air now. Let's move on.
Yeah.
So, what kind of coffee do you like?
I'm loving his reaction.
It's just sweet.
You like that
Yes.
Folger stuff, right? Mom likes that too. When can we go home, Dad?
And that's when he reached
Yeah.
out and caressed his
Touched his
head,
hand.
you
Yeah.
know. Yeah, because it's almost like you don't want to touch him or scare him while you're telling him this really intense stuff.
Yeah, there is something really great when your kids tell you what you like. This is your favorite, right? I'm
Yeah.
like, oh, you clocked that.
Pay attention.
You paid
Yes.
attention. That's cute.
Yeah.
This is Dad's favorite. And you're like, oh, hey, it is my favorite. I don't know, there's something about it that gets me. It gets me.
Yes.
The sweetness. They're
Yeah.
looking. They're paying attention.
Yeah. When can we go home? And then we see them walk off, and yeah,
And
the
he's both
whiteness of
he's
the
be
outside, the sunniness, like we're gonna get there. It might take a little bit, but we will.
I also love there are agents. Like if you're lo not looking at this in like beautiful, crisp, high definition, it's like you don't notice that there are agents waiting outside who've been standing at the front the whole time, just watching him
Yes.
walk in the aisles. Like we are not going to let this guy get hurt. There's just that amazing thing. And he walks off and it's just so great. And the music starts to swell.
Yeah.
It's just great.
Mm-hmm.
And that
brings us to a typical Michael Mann shot. Yeah.
Of two people sitting at a dock.
Looking at the water.
Looking at the water.
Yeah. Oh. Jen, well, thank you for letting me take on a scene that, like, now everyone is going to be like, I wanted it.
Well, no, it's good. It's so great to have you. I really wanted you for this. And that I think we always have fun and great conversations together, but I think this was really, really great to talk to you about. And I'm really glad that you could be a part of the show, because I know that you're not, you know, I think at face value, not a lot of people are like, oh, serial killer movies are my jam. And I know particularly that they're not for you, but like the access of like this really deep relationship and the delicacy and the empathy, I think it's just so perfect for us to talk about. I love this scene to bits. I'm so grateful for your time. Thank you so much. It's so great to see you. And
thank you.
I will make sure I link off to everything, but is there any immediate stuff that you want to plug for Watch with Jen coming up? This episode is going to be dropping around the end of November. Is there any sort of late November, early December kind of specials that are going to be coming up on Watch with Jen that you want to give a shout out to?
Well, recording soon is an episode devoted to Jean-Claude Van Damme with Priscilla Page, Jet Ayers, and Jordan Harper. And I'm joining in. I'm going to kind of let them take it away. I watched those movies a bit with my brother growing up, but they're the experts. So that'll be fun. And then we have other stuff. But I do want to say, it dropped in October. I really loved having on Blake and Rob Belushi to talk about Mindhunter, and I think that was a really good episode. So if you missed that one, do check that out. I would say, but thank
fun.
You, Blake. So wonderful to see you and talk about this. And I do love this movie. There aren't really any Michael Mann movies I wouldn't talk about. So you're good. Yeah.
And there aren't many movies we haven't. So
there you go.
There's one big one that's sitting out there in the breeze. There's one big one. It's sitting out there, and it's like, is it going to be time to talk about it yet? I don't know. I know what's next. Actually, this is a good time to say, by the time you're listening to this, in early December, I will announce what our next deep dive show is. We'll probably have a month off. I'll announce that. I think Jen already knows about it. Jen will definitely be on it. But there'll kind of probably be two big shows next year in amongst Miami Nice and amonggst our physical media shows, whether it's Infinite Companion or Blues Brothers or Too Much Movie. There'll be shows around, but I'm just deciding what the second half year show is, which I may be able to announce, but we'll just see.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds good. We'll go down a cereal aisle and you can talk to me about it. Yeah.
You can delicately get it out of me. All right, Jen, you're the best. Thank you so much for doing this. And thank you everyone for listening.
Latest Michael Mann deep dive at One Heat Minute Productions. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to check out other deep dive series we've done on Michael Mann, go over to oneheatminute.com. You can find links to all of our previous shows, including One Heat Minute, The Last 12 Minutes of the Mohicans, Miami Nice, featuring Katie Walsh and I, and all modern man movies, including Collateral, Ferrari, Black Hat, you name it, it is there. And the Jimmy Kahn Eulogy, One Thief Minute. Plenty of shows over there. If you want to support everything that we do, we'd greatly appreciate it if you checked out our Patreon / One Heat Minute. Over there, you can see weekly new releases. One Hot Take is the show there. You can also see The Decade Project, where we look back 10 years on the films that are still hanging around, currently working through 2014. They'll be on the main feed at the end of the year, but if you are a patron for as little as a dollar a month, you're getting them all throughout the year. And most importantly, as this is a Min Hunter episode, Min Hunter video podcasts will be popping up. Not every single episode, but most episodes will pop up as a video podcast as a drop there, so you can watch and consume and see all of the frames and images that we're talking about in all of these episodes. Every little bit of your support helps. So sharing, talking to us online at OHM Pods or for myself at One Blake Minute on Instagram and Twitter. Thanks so much for listening.